Hello, this is KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM on your radio dial. Or if you're on your computer today, kptz.org. I'm Marianne McNellis, and this show is called Our Town. Have you ever wondered who the people are that you see every day around town? The guy who loads your groceries at Safeway? The woman who serves you a beer at the new bar in town? What about the kids walking to Blue Heron early in the morning or late afternoon? Or the parents or grandparents who are dropping them off. Who are they, anyhow? This show, Our Town, profiles some of the fascinating people who live and work in Port Townsend. We talk with the people who make up the eclectic mix of Jefferson County. We talk about their lives, their dreams, and how they ended up on the western edge of the country, looking across the Strait of Juan de Fuca at Canada. We'll be talking with firefighters and foodies, bus drivers and teenage beauty queens. We'll find out what makes them tick and what they think about living and working in Port Townsend. Listening to Our Town is a way to meet some of Port Townsend's authentic and even eclectic people, your neighbors, your friends, particularly the people you don't know yet but you'd like to meet them. Today we're going to be talking with Roger Short, the proprietor of Short's Family Farm. If you dine in one of Port Townsend's finer restaurants or shop at Key City Fish, you may have sampled some of Short's grass-fed beef. Great stuff for us carnivores. Roger's a man who's evolved greatly over the years, from a traditional dairy farmer to something else, almost beyond organic. Hopefully he'll explain that to us. So welcome to the show, Roger.
Glad to be here.
So, tell me, were you born in Port Townsend?
No, I was not born in Port Townsend. I was born in L.A. and moved to Chemicum when I was 3 years old, 1945.
Well, that sort of counts. So I guess you went to school in Chemicum?
I went to all my grades in Chemicum, along with my eight siblings.
Eight siblings. Wow. Are you the oldest?
I'm number two.
Number two. Okay. And your dad had a dairy farm?
Correct. And grandfather.
Both of them. Wow. And so, you know, a lot of kids who grow up on a farm can't wait to leave the place. But I take it that
I had eight siblings that way.
What made you decide that you wanted to become a dairy farmer?
I don't know. At age three, I fell in love with the farm and when we first moved there. And everything I did through all my life until 12 years ago is 100% dairy.
Wow. Was it hard to take over from your father or your grandfather? I mean, were they set in their ways and didn't like you bringing in new ideas, or were they all for it?
Father was a little hesitant at times. He thought I was kind of actually the young guy out of college, kind of the gopher broke attitude, kind of know-it-all.
A lot of kids are.
So it was a little difficult, and I had trouble understanding how conservative was rather than just going for it, you know, and I'd seen other dairies around the state quite a bit, and in 1970, I bought 80 of the cows and leased the dairy from them.
Well, so what were some of the ideas that you were bringing in at that time that were new then, let's say in the 70s?
Well, in the 70s, it was commercial fertilizers for your fields, get the grass to grow better. We were using some other technologies as far as balancing rations. We're trying to up the amount of grain that we're feeding the cows to get better production, more energy into the cow, all of which I had questions about. Artificial insemination was real big at that time, genetically mating the cows to get better offspring.
So did you study agriculture at university?
I went to Washington State University in the mid-60s. And graduating dairy production, and I was on the cattle judging team. I took soil classes. We took genetics and a whole realm of things, along with accounting and a couple of business classes.
So you not only grew up on a dairy farm, but you studied how to do it better, right?
Correct. And then after I graduated, I worked for WSU for 3 years on a mastitis research project where I went around to the state collecting milk samples from 16 different dairies. I visited each dairy, usually 1 to 2 days every 6 weeks. And to this day, some of those people are still people I stay in touch with as far as people I learn from, some good, some bad things. There's some real top places, and then there's some real places that was you learned a lot of bad things not to do. So it was a good combination, a good learning experience, and mentors throughout my life.
Okay. So it was in 1970 where you were on your own then. You had your own farm, right?
I bought the cows from father and leased the part of the farm. And then in 79, we bought up to 60% of the farm. And right now, we're currently trying to consolidate with a conservation easement with a Jefferson Land Trust to consolidate the farm. So I have 100% of the farm.
Okay. Well, you know, as I said in the introduction, I know that you've undergone some really profound transition in your attitude toward farming, and you changed from being a traditional dairy farmer into being sort of a leader in the grass-fed beef area. And by the way, I just heard, I don't know if you've heard this, but Consumer Reports just in the past couple of days has released some giant study which shows that from Consumer Reports' point of view, grass-fed beef is quite superior to grain-fed beef. But what led you to make the change?
8 years ago, in a three-week period, four things happened to me. One was being a very kind of anti-environmental type person, saw Mother Earth magazine. It talked about the buffalo migrations, how they survived in the plains, and what the great asset they were to the development of the soils on the plains. Then I had a guy call me up wanting to know about my magical soil, and long story on that. Anyway, he was eating dirt for a nutritional supplement.
Okay.
Wow, this is a going thing. But he's probably the smartest man I ever met. His name is Dr. David Jubb, part Aborigine. And I was at the time in my life when I wanted to learn about what some of the unknowns, some of the things we have questions about, to try to figure out what's going on. And he helped answer a lot of those things and give me a lot of insight in what direction to go. At that time, I was going to about our second farmer's market where we're feeding our grass-fed beef. And all I had read about the grass-fed beef was that it's leaner. And that was the benefit, just leaner, not so much fat, and did not beat the grain type thing. And this guy who I'd known said that, Roger, how do you get the fattest fat grass-fed beef? What's going on here? Because I thought we wanted leaner beef. He gave me a book called Gourmet Grass-Fed Beef to Finish. I read that book three times, I think it was, and I just fell in love with the things it was talking about, because it answered so many questions that I'd had throughout my life. The fourth thing was I was asked to be on a panel at Food Inc., and there's probably many of you Port Townsend people that were at that showing of Farm Inc., and I was asked to be on the panel. I don't think I learned anything new from Food Inc., but it woke me up. And when it woke me up, I mean, it just, wow. It was presented in a way that was real stimulating to me to let's try to find some of the answers that's going on in some of the traditional big industrial agriculture that's promoted by industry, the pesticide, herbicide industries, and actually our government was really misleading the farmer to produce a food to meet commodity standards that was unhealthy to the consumer, so the consumer would have to go to the doctor more often and spend more on pharmaceuticals.
Wow.
I think I said that right.
Oh, that's amazing. Well, but it must not be completely simple to sort of wake up and say, well, I'm a dairy farmer producing milk, to, wow, you know, now suddenly it's grass-fed beef. I mean, what was the transition? How did you do that?
It's difficult to say. I know after we sold the cows, I basically cried for 2.5 years. And because I thought I'd totally failed my life because I was going to be a dairy farmer from age 3, and everything I did up until that time was to be a dairy farmer and survive, and I wanted to be an outstanding dairyman. And I felt like I failed at that time because of economics and environmental concerns and my wife nagging at me, which I'm not unhappy that she was. We finally sold the cows, and after 2.5 years, I had a stroke of my optic nerve, which made me blind in my right eye. And I'm so thankful right now that I can still see, be around. And at that time, I'd say, I better find out what's going on here, and I better change my life to a better lifestyle and understand some of the things that I really firmly believe, rather than listening to some of the other stuff that you're hearing along the way.
So there was a period of time where you didn't have any cows, right?
No, we had cows during that time, but we were just kind of transitioning from one to the other the time.
You know, the other day you told me something I found truly fascinating. It's a little odd, I guess. I go to a gym class, and a couple of people in there have these Fitbit things that count their steps and everything. And you happened to tell me that there's something similar for cows, which I thought was really amazing. Can you explain that to me?
The technology that's happening in the dairy industry is probably one of the things that made it financially impossible for me to continue dairying, and the fact that you're trying to keep up with all the technology, and all it does is keep the manufacturer selling you new equipment type thing. As a result, when we first started, we had old bucket milking machines that you had to pick the milk container up and carry it and dump it in the milk cans and then in the milk tank, such. And then we had pipelines that the milk went straight from the milking machine to the pump that pumped it into the milk tank. The next stage was automatic takeoffs, so you attach the milking machine, and when the milk flow stopped, the machine actually came off, so we were not over milking the cow. The next remodel you have to do for $100,000 is put in computers that identify each cow when they come into the milking parlor with a little pedometer on their leg, which identifies the cows, tells how many steps she was taking. The milk goes through a meter, which measures how much milk she produces every milking, and runs a mastitis test on it to find out if they have a slight infection or if they're getting better or worse. Then they put all this stuff together, and it gives you out a readout every day that gives you some deviations from the norm. And we could tell when the cow was ready for artificial insemination by the amount of steps the cows take. So the cows actually had a pedometer on their leg.
That's amazing. It boggles me to think of a cow wearing a pedometer, but I don't know. Maybe in the dairy industry, I guess it's common now, but it's odd to me. So now that you're doing grass-fed beef, some of this stuff is really technical, but broadly speaking, what do you think are the benefits for people eating grass-fed beef over grain-fed?
What I hear is the flavor. A lot of people really like the flavor of grass-fed compared to grain. Myself, I also like the flavor, but I like to think of the benefits of 100% grass-fed and finished beef is some of the health benefits to the person. The omega-3 level compared to the bad omega-6 level. Grass-fed is about the same as the normal diet should be for a human being. If we've grain-feed, the omega-3 level goes down, the omega-6 bad fatty acids goes about 10 to 20 times higher. And it's very responsible for heart conditions and such and other problems that related to the fatty acid side of it. There's also CLA, which is conjugated lunic acid, which is a compound found in grass-fed as opposed to grain-fed that is actually a known cancer preventer. So for those two reasons alone, the health benefits, I'm really excited that I'm providing a food for the community that is healthy rather than one that's going to send them to the doctor down the road.
Do you sell most of your beef here locally?
We're raising about 110 calves every year, of which we're selling the entire marketable part every year locally, mainly in Jefferson County, Kitsap County. Jefferson General Hospital is, I think, our biggest buyer. The food co-op is probably about number two or so. And Key City Fish is all of our products sold frozen except what we sell to Key City Fish. And Key City Fish right now is getting two animals a month that they're selling locally in their store, and also making a trip around the Olympic Peninsula, because I know Claylock Lodge had our beef there when I was over there, along with Red Dog Farm Vegetables. It's going to spread that way. Kevin goes, my son takes care of the retail part of it, and he goes to Port Townsend Farmers Market on Saturdays. Sunday, we're at the Chemical Market. Today, he's in Silverdale. And Thursday, he'll be in Bremerton.
From your vantage point, has grass-fed grown in popularity locally?
Definitely. Nationwide, even.
I see. Can you right now keep up with demand, or is there more demand than you're...
There's more demand than we have right now, and I'm working with another neighboring farmer who we've been working with quite a bit in the past that is going to have some land available so we can expand a little bit.
There's been, in the past few years, quite a movement in Jefferson County toward eat locally and sustainably. Is that something that's realistic for this area?
It's real in Jefferson County, East Jefferson County for sure, and it's happening nationwide. I would definitely say that Jefferson County is definitely a leader in what's happening in the local grown, local produced, local use of food that's produced.
Cool. Can we circle back for a minute to the magic soil part of things? I don't quite understand that. You obviously sell some of your soil. You mentioned the doctor that is marketing some of it, but can you explain what are the properties that makes this soil so desirable?
I've been trying to study and doing a lot of research on my own and talking with other people about what is making magical soil. Actually, magical soil is 45% of the compost I produce from yard waste and livestock manure from our property, our farm, and also several other farms in the area, along with the semi-amu muck soil from Chimicum Valley. So we have a mixture of 45% the compost, 45% of the semi-amu muck soil or peat soil, and 10% sand. What's happening between these two, I'm not exactly sure, but we run a soil test on the compost, we run a soil test on the semi-amu muck. The results we're getting is much better than science soil test would tell us. I really strongly believe there's some symbiotic things happening between the two, of which Dr. Jubb has told me there's up to 50,000 different type of microscopic organisms in the soil, most all dead now type thing. Each one of those could possibly be acting as a catalyst. A catalyst is something that just a minute amount will make a tremendous effect. We definitely know that if a plant needs a certain element, you can send out other fungi, and sends out another fungi to reach out maybe 20, 30, 40 feet to bring that one little element back to the main plant in exchange for energy that the plant gets from photosynthesis to make everything work. That one element may be all that's necessary to complete the life cycle. So I really think that there's some things that's coming from the peat soil through some of these unknown, very, very trace things that stimulating a symbiotic reaction and getting better results than we expect. Okay. I was at the county fair. We had a farm exhibit there. Many, many people stopped by and say how happy they were that we were producing the magical soil. They stop and tell you how good their vegetables were, how they compare to other vegetables type things. And that's real heartwarming because that goes right along with my grass-fed beef, which I like the health benefits.
Right. The magical soil is mainly used in gardens, although some people apparently sample it themselves by taking a few bites, right?
Well, as far as eating the soil, that's a very, very limited thing.
We sell our soil
by the 15-yard truckload, 8-yard truckload. We have some individual bags, just 1 cubic foot. The bags are being sold at the food co-op, Cinex, the farm stand in Chemicum, and Hadlock Building Supply. Okay. Bulk delivery, we deliver to all of Jefferson County, Kitsap, Bainbridge, up to Port Angeles.
Wow.
Well, I like to think of back before a recession in 2007, 2008, probably 75% of my soil was being sold to landscaping, which was nice.
Yeah.
But, you know, the last few years, I think that's totally turned around to where 75% of my soil is being sold to vegetable gardens. And I really strongly recommend it for raised beds, vegetable gardens type thing. And there's more of a limited amount that goes to landscaping.
Well, I'm definitely going to try it on my tomatoes next spring.
Good.
We're running up against time limit here pretty soon, but I just wanted to ask you briefly, and Lord knows how you'll answer briefly on this, where do you stand on the whole GMO issue?
You would have to ask me about the GMO. Very controversial in Port Townsend.
Yes.
I actually stand on the neutral on the GMO. GMO will have some good things sometimes down the road, and some of the things they're doing to improve the plant so it's resistant to some disease is going to be very beneficial. We can make them so they're more winter hardy. We can make them so they're increase the protein in them type things. But the problem is all a GMO is controlled by three different industrial chemical companies who, especially Monsanto, that totally controls the production operation in the courts of how it's handled. The EPA director will be Monsanto CEO. CEO will become the director of EPA in the health departments. So there's a real tight mix thing there. And because of that, that's where I see the real problem with the genetically modified organism.
Well,
the genetically modified corn seed costs four times as much as a good hybrid seed. And it will not produce quite as much, but it's a lot easier to produce it by just putting Roundup on it and takes care of all the weeds. So,
Yeah, I realize I opened a can of worms, so to speak, by asking about this, but
it's something that needs to be discussed, and there's a big movement in this county that is totally against GMO. I don't think there's any GMO in the county at all, but there is GMO things that come into the county, but there's benefits. Some of the research is being done, but it's all being controlled by the people who's manufacturing it.
Yeah,
I've had problems using it because I used Roundup Ready corn and I got some oddball weeds that came from it. I used BST, the growth management hormone, to increase milk production, and I got sick cows. So I'm not in favor of GMO.
Yeah, yeah. I think, you know, historically there have been some incidents where it's been helpful. I read an article about the Irish potato blight, and apparently was something they did that really helped there. I personally think a little dose might, some things might be beneficial, but in general, tread warily.
You need to tread very warily on this issue because big companies are controlling everything from the start. And then they own the seed, so they control you that way. And without question, I think they can manipulate the seed from a plant to introduce a problem down the road that you'll need their product to take care of.
Okay.
Good or bad.
We're going to have to wrap things up here pretty soon, but I just wanted to ask in closing, do you have any immediate plans for the future, any changes in what you're doing?
Well, right now we're working with the land trust on a conservation easement that's not going quite as smoothly as I had hoped it would. Mm. It's taking quite a bit longer to get through the process, and doing things with the county department of government is considerably difficult on some of the issues that they bring up. Farming can't afford some of the things that they're talking about. We plan to continue doing what we're doing. Hopefully a couple of my sons will be involved in what's happening down the road. I kind of question it sometimes because they don't believe in working for 80 hours a week like I do. It's 72.
Well, you know, on the other hand, I bet you your father had some reservations about you as a young farmer too.
Right.
You know?
No, he never had a problem with me putting in the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, I always did twice as much as the rest of the family.
Well, that's good. That's good. Well, as a consumer here in Jefferson County, I certainly hope that the Short family farm will continue to flourish.
I do, too. There's some things that need to be done regulatory-wise to make it so we can do things. And there's a good movement right now, and there's some good young farmers getting started, and there's more. I shouldn't say this, but I was sure looking for a farm wife when I was in the college, but I ended up with a city gal, which is wonderful.
Well,
Sandy's really nice.
That's good. That's excellent. Well, you know, every once in a while you hear the family farm is dying. People say that, generally speaking, about this country. But living here, not so sure that's true. What's your opinion?
It's basically family farm. I mean, in this area, and it's much smaller than the big industrial farms in the Columbia Basin type thing. And a lot of those, with 5,000 acres of wheat and corn, are still family farms. They're not the scale that we have here in Jefferson. And Jefferson will never have big farms.
It's a smaller environment, right? Okay, well, thank you very much for being my guest on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
This is Mary Ann McNellis. The show is called Our Town on KPTZ FM 91.9. And you can also go online, and we're at kptz.org. If you missed part of this show or you want to listen to it again, it will be up as a podcast for a couple of weeks. Go to our home page, look down the left for podcasts, click on it, look for Our Town. And I've been interviewing Roger Short from Short's Family Farm, and you can listen to all of what Roger has to say about the benefits of grass-fed beef. Thank you again. And folks, keep listening to KPTZ FM for more dynamite, eclectic, local programming.